How you doing, Senator?
Hey, good. I drove to work this morning, and I completely spaced off. I just walked in the office, and Christina said, "Why aren't you on the radio?"
Okay, well, we'll give you a flyer. There's probably a million things going on, and dealing with the budget is probably foremost among those right now.
Well, because, I've got a meeting here at 8:30, and I was just on the phone with Gary Pearson talking about we're devising a strategy for today's debate on the inland ports, and they want to expand that number to 8, and we're kind of adamantly opposed to that. So kind of talking about that, and so, yeah. So at any rate, I'm back.
Well,
I'm here.
Yeah, okay. So just go, the reason you're opposed to it, I'm guessing, is because we're talking about, you know, where are we going to get the funding for it? And we're already spread pretty thin with the 5 that we've already established, right? And so we'd have to create a funding mechanism if we had other inland ports created, right?
That is true. And then also, like Gary and I talked, originally this was only going to be 3. And then they agreed to go to 5. And I think Gary made a good point that, you know, it took them 5 years to identify the 5. So it wasn't as if everybody went and grabbed up the 5 and then there are towns out there left out. I mean, bottom line, this comes down to Grand Island. Grand Island decided they want one. They did get one before. So, well, let's just go down to the legislature and pass a bill that says we're going to get 8 and we're going to get one of those 8. And it doesn't work that way. The problem with the bill is the bill came out as a committee priority bill out of the Urban Affairs Committee. It includes that bill. It includes my bill, Community Improvement, and it includes a bed bug bill out of Omaha. Now, the bed bug bill is Senator McKinney, chairman of the Urban Affairs Committee. That's his pet bill. And so the bill passed, I believe, a year ago, was vetoed by the governor, and they could not get the votes to override the veto. So I think McKinney's strategy is, if we can put Jacobson's CIP bill in with the bedbug bill, he's going to have to vote for the bedbug bill. And it's like, no,
yeah,
no, not so fast. I will vote no on the entire bill if I can't get it divided out. And so my plan this morning is probably to see about dividing the question and whether that can be done. It may not be allowed. And if it's not, then I'll just vote no on the entire bill. So I got 2/3 of the bill that I don't like. That's not good odds. So we'll see what happens.
Why do they lump all these bills together? Is it because they feel like they can't get them heard? They don't have enough time to hear them all separately and vote on them separately?
Yes. If you recall back in 2023, which is a year I really don't like to go back to because that was the year of the disaster, if you will. But, particularly when you're in a short session, you just don't have time to hear all, even the priority bills. And so when you start getting filibusters, then that just, it really messes with you in terms of the bills you can get passed. And so everybody wants their bills passed. And so what you try to do is hitch a ride with somebody else's bill. Now, there are rules in terms of what can be attached. The bills have to be germane. They are automatically germane if they come out of the same committee.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that if a bill does not get voted out of committee, and then somebody tries to amend it on the floor into another bill, that's not allowed because it never came out of committee. If it's a bill that's never been heard in committee, you may be required to go back to committee and have a hearing. So there's a lot of rules and guardrails. The other thing is that the speaker after 2023. We had a bill in 2023, I think it had 20-some bills attached to it. Okay, think about that.
Yeah.
20-some bills attached to it. Well, that, we didn't even know what we were passing in 2023 because there was so much in those bills. And I argued in 2024, we spent time just trying to unwind some of the mess that we created in 2023. So the speaker was really thoughtfully said, we're going to limit the priority bills to where you cannot add more than three bills to your priority bill. So we can keep them more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean you can't amend something on the floor into it, but at least we're going to have the discussion on what's being amended in, and we know what we're putting in the bills. So, yes, but that's a good point. But that's why we do it.
Okay, so we've got two bills, basically, that are in the hopper to adjust the two-year budget that you approved last year. We've got 1071 dealing with spending and 1072 of those cash transfers. So right. I see you advanced, the Appropriations Committee advanced both of those on Friday. So what's the next step on those then?
Well, they'll go to select file, which is the last chance to amend those bills.
Okay.
And there will be serious amendments. Normally, all the debate takes place on general file. And like, generally, if you've got a bill that gets past general file, gets moved to select file, there's little or no debate. And same thing on final reading. Final reading is just up and down, and it's very, very quick that goes through.
Yep.
Unless it's a bill that was filibustered on general file, and some of them are filibustered all three rounds of debate. The budget bill has moved to select a budget bill and the cash transfer bill, which are two different bills. There are a number of things we're going to need to change on the budget bills. We're about $125 million out of balance on the budget that was brought to the floor.
Right.
And we've got to get that in balance. And so I was actually on a phone call last night with most of the committee chairs.
Uh-huh.
And we were, and Senator Clements, talking about what we need to do, what changes we need to look at. There's a meeting at 9 o'clock this morning where Senator Clements will go through the budget for the entire legislative staff to discuss the budget itself. And we've got a pretty good idea of what changes we want to make yet. Again, there, as I'd said before, the cuts are becoming more painful. But the governor's staff has made their recommendations, and there will be more cuts to DHHS. When we look at the size of the cuts, they're fairly large. But when you look at the DHHS budget, it's massive. I mean, it's nearly $3 billion a year. This is a lot of money to get spent in that department. And there's a lot of synergies that are occurring where there are programs, as an example, on behavioral health. People get really concerned about behavioral health and the cuts that are occurring there. Well, one reason there's cuts is that they used to outsource all behavioral health. They would hire the behavioral health people who were experts. And they would pay them, they would contract for that.
Yeah.
Well, the state was being taken advantage of. That there would be contractors out there paying a behavioral health provider $17 an hour, and then they would be billing the state $100 an hour.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that doesn't work very well. So what DHHS has done is they've hired behavioral health people, and they work directly for the state, and we're not paying them $100 an hour, okay? So, did we cut back in behavioral health treatments? No. What we did was we got control of the abuses that were occurring on those costs. We're not Minnesota when it comes, but you can get those kinds of abuses if you let them happen. And so I would say that Steve Corsi, who is the director of the DHHS, has done a phenomenal job. I mean, he is incredibly good. We finally have a real businessman who's looking at DHHS and looking at the business practices that are occurring and saying, we can do this better. And he is. But behavioral health is one classic example where we were just, the state was really being taken advantage of. And the key is we do not want to make cutbacks in services. Behavioral health services are very important, very necessary, and growing. But we can do it. We can't do it if we're being taken advantage of by certain contractors. So figure out a better way to do it.
So it looks like the reading of this article that talks about how you're going to handle making up the budget deficit on LB 1072. Does it on the Veterans Aid Fund? It looks like we're still going to transfer about $1.5 million for the next 2 years out of that cash fund.
I think what they've done is they started out, I think, at about $5 million, and but there was so much pressure from those of us in the body and those outside that they've continued to cut it back. Originally, they were looking at just taking the interest, and now they're skinning it down further. I would tell you that it's not done yet. I think those of us who don't want to see any cuts are basically standing by and saying, if there's any money taken from the fund, which I believe the fund had $15 million in it to begin with, which all came from the state, I might add, that you've got to have enough money in the fund to take care of any needs that we're going to have during the next biennium, and any money that comes out has to be replenished in the future biennium. And so that will be targeted by many of us who feel like that is something that should not be messed with. They have done, I would tell you there is no program that's gone unscathed. I will tell you that the $10 million that was set aside for the Halsey camp, most of that money has been pulled out of the fund and used in the budget with the commitment that we will be reappropriating money as the contributions come in. I was not at all happy about that, but I would rather it came from there than out of the Veterans Fund. And so there are several of those funds that we've got earmarked in terms of I'm going to be around a while, at least I plan to be, and I have got a pretty good memory about money that gets taken from various funds.
Yep, one of those too. People are concerned about taking money out of the Perkins County Canal Fund, and it looks like we're going to have to take about $6 million of interest from the $628 million reserve for the fund.
Yeah, there's a very bright line on the Perkins County Canal Fund. I think that most of the conservatives understand that that the message being sent to Colorado, if we touch the principal in the fund, that the message being sent to Colorado, and hence the message Colorado is sending to the Supreme Court or the Solicitor General, is Nebraska's not serious about building the canal because they're not holding that money sacred.
Right.
And because of that, you should not rule on this. Just don't take the case. Don't rule on it because Nebraska is not serious. And AG Hilders made that clear again in Ogallala here a week ago, and he's right. And so that's why that principal in that fund has not been touched. And of course, the prison fund, the prison is under construction now, and it would be, we could take funds from that, but you're going to have to be prepared to reappropriate dollars. And I will tell you, as hard as it was to get the money appropriated the first time, because there are those who don't think we need a new prison, that could be very difficult. So there's usually a story as to what funds got touched and which ones did not. And but yes, the interest is kind of fair game. It was already being committed elsewhere. Frankly, the interest in the Perkins County Canal Fund was going to Omaha, and that money got clawed back. So, and that was done while Justin Wayne was down here.
And then the what seems like an annual thing that comes up, and anytime you have a budget shortfall, is raise a cigarette tax, and that was that did not advance that bill 1124 that would have boosted the cigarette tax from 64 cents per pack to $1.64. Too much opposition for that to advance.
Yeah, it it really was, I think, two votes short. You know how to really pick a scab here, because let's just say that the votes that occurred on cloture on that bill is going to have an impact on how we finish the session. There's a group of four senators, conservative senators, who have taken the tack that there will be no new taxes, and they're also looking at fees as being taxes. Now, a lot of us believe that we do not want to raise taxes, but we have to understand that we're reducing the state income tax rate each year. We got one more year of reductions. That's costing us over $200 million a year out of the budget. And the Trump tax cuts on the One Big Beautiful Bill also was about $200 million less revenue for the state that was coming from just from the, if you look at the deficit of $471 million originally, about a little over $200 million of that were tax reductions that automatically took place because the state tax code is tied to the federal tax code.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing. It reduced people's taxes. But when you have $400 million in state taxes that are reduced, then we probably need to look at net reductions, not gross reductions. And this group are saying, nope, it's any increase, even if it's offsetting a decrease that occurred somewhere else. Well, our budget does not allow us to do that. And so that's where these four senators kind of put themselves out there as we're the real conservatives. Well, the rest of us think that we're conservatives too, but we're realists when we have to balance the budget. And we're not interested in halting the tax cuts. We're not interested in doing a number of other things that would impact taxes. But we do have to balance the budget. And I think a lot of the rest of us look at this and say that smoking, the average price of cigarette taxes across the country is $2.05 a pack. We're at 64. If we raise the dollar, we're at $1.64, still well under the $2.05. We would be higher than Missouri, but we would be right in the range of all the other states around us. So from that standpoint, that seemed to be a reasonable compromise. That's going to produce $40 to $50 million a year in revenue. Yes, I don't disagree that there will be some people that will literally drive to Missouri and buy several cases of cigarettes and bring them back, and they'll trade off driving there. Yeah, we could see lower cigarette sales, and we could see people that quit smoking. I don't know. I don't know that quitting smoking is a bad public policy, okay?
Yeah.
And when you look at smoking and how it contributes to so many other health costs, particularly what it costs us in Medicaid, our Medicaid spending is going up $71 million year over year.
Yep.
$71 million. So if we can get $40 million from cigarette tax, which probably is going to offset most of those, that $71 million, cigarette smoking probably contributed to it. And so I know there's a lot of smokers out there that are going to hate me for saying that, but when we're making these decisions, you know, should smokers pay for some of their own self-inflicted healthcare costs, or should everybody just pay it? And I think the sense is that perhaps raising the cigarette tax will help them self-fund some of the costs of the healthcare later, and it will probably also contribute to lowering the amount of smoking that goes on. So that's why there was a big divide. And I think these four senators have come under intense pressure, and I think that's probably an understatement, and it could impact some of the bills as we go through the remainder of the session.
All right. Senator, thanks for your time. If they'd like to get a hold of you, they can always call your office or email you.
You bet. 402-471-2729, M. Jacobson with an O at leg.ne.gov.
All right, thanks, Mike. Appreciate your time, and have a good week, and we'll catch up 1 week from today, okay?
Hey, sorry for the tardiness.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, have a good week.